This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I hope you're taking care of yourselves and each other. It's an interesting time to be a podcaster because much of what I do, I can do from home. And if I were making $1 million on this podcast, that would be amazing, but I'm not. But it does feel good to just be able to have conversations and to have some sense of a regular schedule of just like every week I'm delivering you a podcast and I can talk to these folks through Skype. So there's also social distancing. So let's keep going. Listen, I don't know if you've heard, but there are super big changes in the world besides the obvious. This is my very last show on the Voice America Network. I am venturing out on my own to independently produce Sex Out Loud as a podcast. So what does that mean for you, my intrepid listeners? Well, if you currently listen to my show via the Voice America app or website, you need to switch to a new platform in order to hear it. There will be no more live shows. They will all be podcasts from here on out. But Raymond and I are determined to bring you a revamped, revitalized Sex Out Loud. Will we have new theme music and an opening? Yes, we will. I'm sure you've all been praying for that for 7.5 years, as I have. There could be some technical issues in making the smooth transition, so please hang in there with me. The best thing you can do is subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, like the Apple Store, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and then you won't miss a single episode. I really do appreciate all of you for listening and supporting this show, whether you started with me back in 2012 in the very first season or you just found me today with this podcast. Check sexoutloudradio.com and my social media at Tristan Taramino across all platforms for the latest news about the big move. It's funny that my guest for my final episode on Voice America is someone who I've known for more than 25 years. It's a little full circle. She's been on my show before a couple times. She's also a podcaster herself. Let me tell you about her. Jacqueline Friedman is a writer, educator, activist, and creator of 3 books. Yes Means Yes, Visions of Female Sexual Power, and A World Without Rape. What You Really, Really Want, The Smart Girl's Shame-Free Guide to Sex and Safety, and Unscrewed, Women, Sex, Power, and How to Stop Letting the System Screw Us All. Her podcast, which is also called Unscrewed, was named one of the best sex podcasts by both Esquire and Marie Claire, and you'll love it, so you should go listen to that. Jacqueline is the founder and former executive director of Women, Action, and the Media, where she led the successful hashtag FBRape campaign to apply Facebook's hate speech ban to content that promotes gender-based violence. I'm so happy to welcome her back to the show. Hey, Jacqueline.
Hey, Tristan. Everything is change, and change is everything.
Change is everything. Change is the only guarantee in life, right?
Here we are getting our full money's worth on that guarantee.
So we're going to talk about your latest book, which you created with co-editor Jessica Valenti. It's called Believe Me, yes. How Trusting Women Can Change the World. And I got to see, you did a reading in LA, so I got to see you in person as well as some contributors, probably like a month ago. I don't know, what is time? What day is it even? I lost a little bit track of that. Like, I definitely went to the kitchen this morning and was like, is it Wednesday or is it Thursday or is it Friday? I don't know. So I want you maybe to read a little bit from your piece in the book a little bit later. Oh, but okay. Listen, this book feels insanely timely. It's sort of like the experience of reading it is both almost like a time capsule. Like, wait, where are we? Where have we come since, for example, you know, Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill? And how many examples we've had since that moment of people not believing women. And you know, the most recent examples, I mean, the person in the White House, Brett Kavanaugh, Harvey Weinstein was convicted, which is fantastic. Yes. But you know, I'm reminded that a handful of women are named in this lawsuit, whereas he's had probably 180. Yeah. He's had 80 people accuse him. So it's like, oh, he's been convicted of like two counts, which was good enough to throw him in jail, hopefully for the rest of his life. But fuck.
And the jury didn't even find on all of the women who testified. Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't even believe all the women who came forward in that courtroom.
So looking back on all of this, I mean, do you feel like the tide is changing? Do you feel like hashtag Me Too has taken hold and will not let up? Do you feel like there are more instances of women being believed? Because I feel like the most high profile ones are where women still aren't believed.
Well, I want to talk for a second about what we mean by believe me, because there's a lot of bad faith argument about what it means to believe women and to believe survivors, which is, of course, two different but overlapping ideas. Mm-hmm. When we say believe me, we don't mean believe all women all the time about everything, regardless of evidence to the contrary. But we also don't mean pat women on the head and say, I believe you, and then don't change anything, right? So in order to believe women, you have to treat women both as credible and as important. So, for example, in the Christine Blasey Ford case, most people found her credible. The president on Twitter said he thought she seemed credible. But the powers that be didn't act as though she was important. And so there's two components that we have to meet. And I think that we have gotten a little better at believing women in terms of finding women credible, but we have not yet found as a culture in our best interest to treat women as important. And one of the things I argue in my essay is that we all pay a public health price for that every day. So I don't know. Turning points are not, I'm not a future prognosticator. If I did, I would hope I would have predicted this, because it's a pretty big thing that we're going through right now. But I feel like it's my job, instead of predicting whether or not we've made that turn, to sort of try and force it. And that's what we're doing with this book.
And doing it in a really complex way. I mean, one of the things that I really appreciated about all these essays, you know, I'm not going to lie, like, I'm bummed, all the COVID-19 panic. And I'm like, oh, great, the book I'm reading this week is about, I know, women not being believed. That's a great way to boost the serotonin in my brain. But actually, it surprised me, because I feel like you, at least in reading the pieces, it felt like you gave all the writers a kind of direction of, please tell us your story. Please tell us what you want to address about women not being believed. And then please, please bring us into the future. Please tell us how we can make a change, what the call to action is, where the shift is.
So yeah, that was super deliberate. You know, one of the things that we really, when we were looking at Yes Means Yes, the book that Jessica and I did previously, that we really felt like helped it succeed and have the cultural impact that it has had, is that it's not just describing what's bad and wrong, right? It's about what is the world we're working toward together, not just against. And it was hard. The two main notes that we had to give our writers for Believe Me, who, by the way, most of whom were writing during the fall of 2018, which was the Kavanaugh-Blasey Ford hearing, mm-hmm. Tree of Life shooting, family separation crisis. There was a shooting at a black church. Mm-hmm. Every one of our writers was going through some kind of personal hell while trying to write this stuff. And the number one and two notes we gave were, go deeper. We need to feel more from you. We need to feel you and your voice and your story. And two is, what is the world? How will the world be better if we make this change that you're addressing? And we had to really, it's hard when you're under siege to really be vulnerable and also to have a future vision. But we really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Right, right. And that just comes through kind of loud and clear in these pieces. And it was appreciated as a reader. I felt like, okay, I'm not going to walk away from this book with just a sense of hopelessness, which I think, we don't need more of that right now.
No, we need imaginary, even if we can't live in the, I had writers say, look, I can write how the world would be better, but I don't think we can get there from here. Like, I'm not that optimistic. And I was like, that's fine. Just create a space for us to imagine the world better. And then somebody else might be able to build that bridge. We need those imaginary spaces.
We're going to take a commercial break and hear from our great sponsors who make this show possible now more than ever. We will be back to talk more about Believe Me and Jacqueline's incredible insights on really gender and sexual politics in the now. So stay with us.
Spring is on the way, and the Pleasure Chest is ready to help you get sprung. On March 8th, celebrate International Women's Day and get the women in your life a gift. You know, sex toys keep on giving. So what about the LaWand limited edition Feel My Power vibrator, or the popular Womanizer Duo, or the WeVibe Chorus? From March 8th to the 15th, save 10% on all orders $100 and up. Online only, some exclusions apply. On March 22nd, LaWand presents Pleasure Confessional at the West Hollywood store. Step into the confessional booth and tell us your story of empowerment in or outside the bedroom. Win prizes and enjoy exclusive discounts on the empowering LaWand line. There are free sex ed classes throughout the month on everything from strap-ons to Transsex 101, including my class on March 21st, How to Plan a Gangbang at the Upper East Side store in New York City. As always, get great pleasure tips on their Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores and go to pleasurechest.com for everything you need to celebrate spring. I'm sure you follow at least one porn star Instagram account that's been deleted with no explanation. YouTube and Facebook are censoring content and dating apps are full of bots. It's becoming more and more difficult for people to connect, especially intimately online. MyGirlFund.com allows members to form virtual relationships with amazing women. MyGirlFund.com, you can meet, message, share photos and videos, and cam with women in private. Listen, if you know me, you know that two of my biggest passions are people experiencing pleasure in diverse, shame-free ways. and folks getting paid fairly for their labor. It's really difficult for women to get paid for virtual adult work without risking personal exposure. Many women are willing to do dirty chat or share nude content for money, but safe and discreet platforms are rare. My Girl Fund allows its female members to control their exposure. They connect with who they want to connect with, control how they want to interact, and decide what they charge for these interactions. My Girl Fund has been around since 2009, providing space for people to have the intimate interactions that they want. Sign up at mygirlfund.com/Tristan and get ready to meet and make connections in a safe, private, adult community.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to give super shout outs to my amazing sponsors for this episode. The Pleasure Chest has been my sponsor for years and years and years. And gosh, don't you deserve a little pleasure right now? I think so. Go to thepleasurechest.com, buy yourself something nice, and if not, just browse. Window shopping on the internet, I'm telling you, it can be a balm. It really can, B-A-L-M, balm. Just to get your mind off things for a while. And then, you know, think about purchasing later. Also, Uberlube is keeping us all wet and lubricated for this time when we are, I myself am self-quarantined with my lover. So all we have to really do is work and have sex and eat. And of course, mygirlfund.com. Hey, if you are looking for an intimate connection that doesn't put your health at risk, that would be a great place to go right about now, mygirlfund.com. I also want to shout out one of my regular advertisers, Calm. The Calm app, which is all about mindfulness and meditation, they've created a free resource for folks who are looking for a little calm in their lives. So you should check that out too. I'm talking today with Jacqueline Friedman, who is one of the creators of the book, Believe Me, How Trusting Women Can Change the World. So Jacqueline, I want to dig into a few of the specific essays in the book that I really, really enjoyed. I mean, if enjoyed is possible, right? You know, one of the things that I thought about immediately, and this was a question I was going to ask you when I was at your reading, but we ran out of time, is that Native women, Indigenous women, experience the highest rates of sexual assault and violence of anyone in the United States. And some of that is from outside the Native community, from non-Native folks, and some of it is from within their own communities. So there's this chapter by Sarah Deer and Bonnie Claremont called Gossip is an English Word, where essentially they talk about the power and meaning of women being able to freely talk to each other and protect each other by giving people information about predators, about their own experiences. And they also argue that there need to be these kind of safer spaces for, especially for women and two-spirit folks, to be able to kind of tell their truths to one another so that we can in some way by, you know, have some community policing. I don't like the word policing, but
accountability,
accountability. Yeah. And just, yeah. And justice and also take care of each other.
Yeah.
Right. And essentially what they're arguing for is spaces that they say already exist, right. Have existed for, forever in Native American communities, which are places where you walk in the door and women are believed.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I reached out to Sarah, who's phenomenal. She's a MacArthur Genius Award winner, a lawyer who has changed law for Native American tribes being able to adjudicate sexual assault cases in their own courts, which they were not previously able to do.
Yes, that's another major complication here, is because the legal stuff is so complex that often justice eludes them in very specific ways with the judicial system. Yeah.
So I reached out to Sarah when we were putting the book together, and I said, we would just love to have literally anything you want to write for us along these lines. And she said, I have been wanting to write this with my mentor, Bonnie Claremont. It's called Gossip is an English Word. She was like ready. And the title comes from the fact that in native languages, at least the ones that they're familiar with, which between the two of them is quite a few of them, there's no word that equates to the English word gossip. There are words for women talking amongst themselves, but they don't have a negative or frivolous connotation to them, because women communicating with each other and believing each other is, you're right, critical to their survival. And I think that, what we have language for tells us a lot about what we prioritize and what we make space for. Mm-hmm. So I learned so much from that essay.
I found that it has a truly unexpected companion essay. Yeah. And that is Sassafras Lowry.
Yeah.
Talking about growing up as a queer punk among homeless or precariously housed LGBTQ plus folks in the 90s. First of all, Sassafras's piece is fantastic and such an amazing piece of oral history and culture of the queers that we did not see, you know, in the New York Times in the 1990s, right? But in that, Lowry also talks about how these spaces that Sassafras found took for granted that people had experienced a level of sexual violence and trauma in their lives, and that it was okay to share it. It was okay to say it out loud after years of being silenced.
Yeah. And that essay came in through our open call for pitches. So we did some reaching out to individuals that we knew we would want to hear from. And we also put out an open call for pitches because we knew that we wanted to go beyond who we knew to ask. And that pitch came in, and both Jessica and I were like, we have to hear from this, right? It felt almost like a dispatch from the future we were trying to create, right? Because they're describing what it meant to them to come up in a culture that did inherently believe them. Mm-hmm. And did inherently believe survivors, and that was already a value. And it brought to mind something that Heather Corinna, the founder of Scarlet Teen, told me for my last book, for Unscrewed, which is Heather sometimes does sex education for homeless and precariously housed young people, and can speak much more freely and do much more the kind of sex education they want to do with those young people, precisely because culturally we don't give a shit about them. Right. And a lot of times sex ed politics and purity culture and rape culture is actually about white supremacy and like the purity of white girls, especially like white girls of means, right? White girls from the power classes. And so it's possible, like there's this weird paradox where with the folks that we consider, I'm using a we sort of to speak as the culture at large, obviously, not you and me, but that the culture tends to consider not valuable or even invisible, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes these communities can innovate in ways that they couldn't if the white hot spotlight was on them.
Yes.
And I don't think we think about it that way, right? We think about sort of like, the more marginalized you are culturally, the worse off you are on every axis. And that is true in a lot of ways, but it's not quite that simple. And I think it's really important to remember that.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah. Because there's also class implications here.
Yeah.
Right. That are fascinating in that piece. And then speaking of white supremacy.
Yeah. Let's speak about white supremacy.
So I love this piece by Soraya Nadia McDonald. It's called Believe Me Means Believing That Black Women Are People.
Which is heartbreaking to have to say, but yes.
I mean, to even say the phrase, like, makes me, you know, brings up all my own, like, white shame and guilt. But it also speaks to so many things, like, about what's going on, not just Black Lives Matter, but also this notion that mortality rates for pregnant Black women are through the roof.
Shocking.
And it actually doesn't matter what class they are. Black women, no matter what class or education level they are less believed about their pain, are less believed when they say something doesn't feel right, something's going wrong, especially in birth. And it's a hard piece to read because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so important because I think I think white people don't know, right? I think white people don't know about Black women's maternal mortality crisis in this country. And the way that, and she talks about this, the way that even Serena Williams, right? Like who... Mm. Couldn't have any more wealth and privilege as a Black woman, right? Unless she's Oprah, I guess. Beyonce almost died in childbirth and knew what she needed and was telling the doctors and nurses what she needed, and they were not listening to her, and she almost died because of it. It's a scandal, and it's a moral stain.
Mm-hmm.
And that piece, I think, rhymes not only with Loretta Ross's essay, which is about the history of Black women's leadership in the rape crisis movement, which mm-hmm. was built in the 1970s, because, of course, Soraya Nadia McDonald writes about Loretta Ross's story. But also, I think that piece rhymes with Samantha Irby's essay, which is about basically, like, I mean, Sam Irby is such a funny writer. And we were so happy she wanted to write for us because we wanted there to be moments of lightness in the book also, mm-hmm, obviously. Mm-hmm. But so she writes very, very funnily about, like, all the times she's, like, passed off lies and people have believed her, right? Like, and then she's like, why am I never fucking believed about what's happening in my own body? As somebody who's with a chronic illness, like, how come I can lie about the stupidest bullshit, but I can't be believed about this most critical issue? And ultimately, you know, there's connections in the book that have really made themselves clear to me while I've been traveling with it and talking about it. You know, we started off thinking about Believe Me specifically around sexual violence and gender-based violence, but obviously it is connected to whether or not we believe which women about pain and medical needs. And it also is connected to women's leadership.
This brings me to my heartbreaking connection to this book, which is I've just started simultaneously reading this book, the documentary on Hillary Clinton.
I haven't brought myself to watch it.
Okay. Yet. It's on Hulu right now.
It stares at me every time I open Hulu.
Yeah. So it's because they know the algorithm and they know you're supposed to be wanting to watch it. They're like, this lady likes feminist shit. Just let's tell her that this is a recommendation for her. So I'm three episodes into it. What's most heartbreaking, I mean, it's revelatory. It's enlightening. It's interesting and fascinating. And it's also depressing because when they take us through her candidacy for president, it's like writing the script for Elizabeth Warren.
Yep. And the whole time in 2016, the people who were saying, I could never vote for Shillery, right, were saying, mm-hmm, if only Elizabeth Warren would run, mm-hmm, I love to vote for a woman, just not this
woman. Just not Hillary, just not this woman.
I would love to vote for Elizabeth Warren. And then this time around, they were ripping Elizabeth Warren to shreds and sending her snake emojis and saying, if only AOC were running. But, you know, literally the minute AOC said something nice about Elizabeth Warren's SNL appearance after she dropped out of the race, those same people turned on AOC, right?
Right.
So
right.
The woman they want is a woman who does not want power.
And who does not exist, quite frankly. Who does not exist. That's what's so heartbreaking, is to think it's 2020 and every single criticism that was leveled against Hillary has been leveled against Elizabeth Warren. And it's all about, and never leveled against male candidates, right?
Oh,
it's like,
God.
In men, you're competent and assertive. In women, you're a fucking power hungry and ambitious and need to back the fuck off.
Yeah.
What I think is the hardest thing about watching this Hillary documentary, is just seeing how there's this constant repetition. And it reminds me of what you said at the top, right? What you said at the top was, it's not just about believing women. It's about also believing that they're important.
Yes.
And so Elizabeth Warren can have the best plan among any candidate, right? The most comprehensive, the ones that make sense. And yet we don't consider her important enough to elect.
No. And in fact, the fact that we find her credible makes us like her less. I talk about this in my essay. For men, when we find them more believable, we like them more.
Of course.
But for women, the absolute reverse is true on a societal level. With women, we find them more credible. We punish women by reducing how much we like them. And that's exactly what we saw happen both with Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren, and I'm sure AOC any second now.
Mm-hmm,
Every woman who gets quote-unquote too much power, and they're taken down often by threats of sexual violence, which is one of the ways that sexual violence and women's leadership are completely connected, right? So all of the online harassment against Warren supporters, or some of which I experienced, which is the same shit we experienced around Hillary, is gendered and often involves threats of sexual violence. Just a week or two ago, maybe 3 weeks now, a Canadian oil guy executive circulated a illustration of Greta Thunberg being raped, right?
Yes.
Because she's perceived as having, quote unquote, too much power, right? So the punishment we know is not only that we're not going to elect you, but that we're going to degrade you sexually.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was also a trend in the 2016 election of, like, porn parodies about Hillary, like and Michelle Obama, like, and, you know, when we could talk, I know we're heading to a break, so I don't know if we have time to talk about that. But, like, the embedded ideas that, like, a woman being in porn is degrading is also, like, a whole show.
Well,
but,
right. But also just that sexual violence is a tool.
Yeah.
It's a tool of the patriarchy. It's a tool of imperialism. It's a tool of colonialism. And it really is a way to silence and terrorize women.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I'm hoping you'll share a little bit of your essay from the book, which I love, and we'll talk more about it. So don't go anywhere, people.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Hi, everyone. Tristan here. Hey, lube makes everything better. Duh. And I mean everything. Vaginal and anal penetration, hand jobs, hand sex, masturbation, fingering, grinding, oral sex. You name it, lube will improve it. When you're choosing a lube, you want one with high-quality ingredients. UberLube is silicone with a little vitamin E. That's it. No parabens, no petrochemicals, no strange things you can't pronounce. I have a very sensitive pussy, and that is not a metaphor. It's easily irritated, and plenty of lubes I've tried just do not agree with me. I like UberLube because it's scent-free, flavorless, simple ingredients, and long-lasting. Plus, it's got a pump, which is easy to use and hygienic because you're not always touching the top of it. Oh, and it will not stain clothing or bedding. Any spills can be cleaned up with detergent and water. Right now, UberLube is offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use my code Tristan at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code Tristan at UberLube, UberLube.com. UberLube lets you feel what you want to feel.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Jacqueline Friedman, a writer, educator, activist, game changer, thought leader. I'm going to add all these other things.
Keep it coming. I'm moisturizing with it. Yeah.
And also the co-editor of Believe Me, How Trusting Women Can Change the World. And I would love to give you a taste of this book and Jacqueline's smarts. So she's agreed to read a passage from her own essay in the book. So take it away.
Yeah, sure. So my essay is kind of the closing argument of the book. And in it, I talk about the hidden costs of not believing women. Because a lot of times the argument is about the cost of believing women, right? Like, well, if you ask us to do that, all these horrible things will happen. But we're not weighing that against the costs we're already paying right now of disbelieving women. And the essay actually opens by talking about mass shootings and how so often the shooters, who are always men, have a history of violence against women. And that if we actually treated women, those women that they had already hurt, as both credible and important, we might have made it a lot harder for those guys to have guns in the first place to commit a mass shooting with. And there are many, many more examples in the essay. So I'm going to read starting from a bit in the middle. I read this, by the way, like the day Elizabeth Warren dropped out at an event. And I was like, I swear I did not write this morning. It feels very relevant to the conversation. Mm-hmm. The truth underlying the public health crisis of women's believability is even worse than it looks. That's because social researchers have long demonstrated that it's not just that we hold women to much higher standards than we do men before we believe them. It's more perverse than that. We prefer not finding women credible. As a culture, we hate to believe women, and we penalize them for forcing us to do so. In other words, as women's credibility increases, especially in ways that defy gender norms, our social likability decreases. We become shrill bitches, ball busters, too aggressive, too bossy, such intolerable know-it-alls. It's not enough that we demand women clear a much higher bar than men do to prove our trustworthiness. We're mad when women manage to succeed anyway, and we're all paying the price for that anger. Some of the losses are literally immeasurable. I know of no woman who doesn't house inside her the nagging feeling that maybe what she has to say is not that important, or will cause too much trouble, or will put her in danger. I know of no woman who has not at least some of the time allowed that feeling to prevail, to smother her impulse to speak. I am haunted by the losses to humanity those infinite silences represent. What inventions and innovations are we suffering without? What tragedies proceeded unprevented? What kindness and community are we starving for that we could be sustained by had we not silenced ourselves? For that matter, what offerings could we be benefiting from if women simply didn't have to work so hard to prove our credibility to ourselves and others? How many hours of our lives have been stolen from us in this way? And yet still today, how many women does it take to overcome the credibility of one man? It took 60 for sexual abuse allegations to become credible against Bill Cosby. For Harvey Weinstein to be credibly accused of sexual harassment and assault, the number is more like 80 and convicted. Now, I guess I can add, which is good. For some, we have yet to find the number. Over a dozen accused Donald Trump of sexual assault, and he is still the president of the United States as of this writing. Women ourselves are far from immune to gendered disbelief. In one 2015 Harvard study, almost a quarter of the teen girls preferred male political leaders over female ones. Only 8% of the girls expressed a bias in favor of women leaders. It's important to understand how deeply rooted this dynamic is. As has been observed of many oppressive institutions, the delegitimization of women's authority isn't the unfortunate side effect of a broken framework. It's the grease that makes the entire system go. Women's erasure is an essential part of the deal powerful men have always made with the men they would have power over. Let me have control over you, and in turn, I will ensure you can control women. It's the same bargain white women make when they support white supremacist men in power. If I acquiesce to your demeaning me because of my gender, you will at least allow me to demean others because of their race. There is one meaningful way in which the fearmongers are right. Because the existing power structure is built on female subjugation, female credibility is inherently dangerous to it.
I got you a bumper sticker that said you were dangerous.
Remember? Yes.
I mean, it's like a little, you know, book gift. I brought you one.
I love it.
There's something about laying out the numbers there.
Yeah.
That's stark.
It's bleak.
It's stark and it's bleak. And again, not included in those numbers, right, are women who simply have several kinds of multiple oppression working against them. I'm thinking here of homeless women, immigrant women, mm-hmm. lower class women, sex workers, that they don't even count in the number, right?
Nope.
Because of their social location, they're automatically disbelieved. You know, and we saw this with Stormy Daniels, with President Trump. Also, Jessica Drake is one of the people who came forward to accuse him. And people are like, these are porn stars. Like, what are they expecting?
Yep.
And that reminds me, Tina Horn's essay in this book is so brilliant.
I was hoping you would talk to me about it. No interviewer has wanted to talk to me about it.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, I think it's, I mean, maybe I'm like partial, but
favorites. I know. And we were both friends with her, but
I mean, yeah, but also I, you know, I wanted to read the piece about sex workers and also about sexual labor. And this notion that one of the ways in which the conservative right wing and anti-porn feminists have held the mic and held people's attention and argued that all women are exploited and objectified through porn is not listening to the actual women who make the porn, discrediting them, ignoring them, not believing them when they say, here is why I do my job and here is my experience of the job. Here is what I need to feel safe.
And not believing that women in porn can tell the difference between a job that is sometimes shitty, as all jobs are, and exploitation, right?
Exactly.
And that there's this added layer of need to sort of somehow prove that you love and are having, like, great pleasure at your job.
Right. Like, right. When we don't ask people who are doing Postmates deliveries right now if you love your job. When you're like trying to find parking.
Right. Are you enjoying your job? Is it bringing you pleasure?
Is it bringing you pleasure? Yeah, it's so incisive and just brings another example of how women are out in public at the risk of being further stigmatized as sex workers and as laborers and saying, this is really what we need to make our job you know, feel like we are being paid for our labor, feel like we are taking care of our bodies and our physical and mental health. Like, here is what we need. And I've seen this. I've seen these actual women go to Sacramento around, you know, various kinds of legislation that's been written by non-sex workers about how to regulate sex work and mostly all men. And they simply are not listened to. They're simply not listened to. And it's like if any other worker,
you know, if like a group of women from a retail company came forward and said, this is our, these are our negative experiences at work, and this is what needs to change. It's like there's always porn and sexual labor is being put in this other category where we just simply disregard. We disregard. Yeah.
And I should say, Tina is also like just such a fucking tremendous writer. Like that essay is so, like, it's so funny and smart, and it takes like surprising turns. I actually have really great memory of spending like an hour or two on like sitting on the couch on the phone with her, like working some of the shit in that essay out together. And like, I just love. I love how her mind works. Yeah.
Yeah. I love how her mind works too. Hey, Tina, we are just loving on you right now.
We love you.
I should also say that Tina has a great podcast called Why Are People Into That? All About Sex.
So good. Yeah.
That you should listen to. Okay. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the essay in the book that really caught me off guard and brought me to tears in unexpected ways. So, you don't want to miss that. Stay tuned.
We're with you wherever Alexa and Google are. At home, in the car, on your smart TV, and your connected devices. Hey, Alexa.
Hey, Google. Play my favorite Voice America podcast on TuneIn.
It's just that easy. But make sure you actually mention the name of the podcast show to make it work.
Spring is on the way, and the Pleasure Chest is ready to help you get sprung. On March 8th, celebrate International Women's Day and get the women in your life a gift. You know, sex toys keep on giving. So what about the LaWand limited edition Feel My Power Vibrator, or the popular Womanizer Duo, or the We Vibe Chorus? From March 8th to the 15th, save 10% on all orders $100 and up. Online only, some exclusions apply. On March 22nd, LaWand presents Pleasure Confessional at the West Hollywood store. Step into the confessional booth and tell us your story of empowerment in or outside the bedroom. Win prizes and enjoy exclusive discounts on the empowering LaWand line. There are free sex ed classes throughout the month on everything from strap-ons to Transsex 101, including my class on March 21st. How to Plan a Gangbang at the Upper East Side store in New York City. As always, get great pleasure tips on their Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores and go to pleasurechest.com for everything you need to celebrate spring.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Believe Me, How Trusting Women Can Change the World is a new book by Jessica Valenti and Jacqueline Friedman, who brought you the groundbreaking culture-shifting book, Yes Means Yes. So I teased this before the break about the essay that caught me off guard in how it moved me. So I'm going to get to tell you now. And Jacqueline doesn't even know.
No, I'm on tenterhooks here.
You are on tenterhooks. Okay. This essay is by Anuradha Bhagwati, and it's called Do Not Pet. It is about a veteran who is now disabled and is sort of hopeful and excited to get a service dog. And so first, you know, we go to the service dog camp, and for me, I'm thinking, you know, service dogs are lifesavers. They make me smile whenever I see them out. I love them. And then she goes into her experiences in New York City as a woman with what we might call an invisible disability, a disability. You know, she's not in a wheelchair. She doesn't walk with a cane. She's not carrying around oxygen. And her experience of people complaining about the dog at various places like her gym, the building she lives in, people asking her inappropriate questions, which are actually against the law. They're against ADA rules. And people simply believing she doesn't deserve to have this dog, and this dog doesn't deserve to be in public spaces with her at all times. Yeah. It was fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It was a story of service dogs I haven't heard. You know, I've only seen those cute mini documentaries where kids with seizure disorders get their puppies, and it just makes you cry for a different reason.
Yeah.
But this essay, oh.
I know Adorana. She's a friend of mine. And I've known her through this journey. And I was so glad that she wanted to talk about it because part of the reason also, you know, she's not only a veteran, but she's also a survivor of sexual trauma, and both in and out of the military. And she founded the organization SWAN, Service Women's Action Network, which is the reason that people know that there's an issue with sexual assault in the military. She's the one who sort of forced Congress's hand and made them start trying to deal with it. So she's an absolute powerhouse. And by the way, as an aside, if I may promote her, like her memoir, which is called Unbecoming, which is about all the stuff I just described, is fantastic and is being adapted. I forget. I think it's TV and not movie. The difference between the two is getting vague. But
Golden age of television. She's going to be better. Yeah,
played by Frida Pinto, which is so exciting. I'm really nerded out about it. Anyway, so like, here's a woman, an Indian woman, a brown woman, who is trying to take up space as a veteran, as a trauma survivor, as a disabled person, and not only has gone through this experience of not being believed by the military and has taken on the military about that, but now that she's trying to recover from all that is not being believed about needing her fucking service dog. Like the layers upon layers of sort of how the world wants to just erase her. I honestly get so angry. So angry.
So yeah, you went to anger. I went to sadness. We all have these like different reactions, but it also spoke to this piece about how disabled women are less likely to be believed.
Yeah.
Right. And the notion that
not being allowed to take up space, like,
yes. And the notion that as a woman, you can be interrogated about literally just living your life. Right. She's not going to restaurants and saying, I'd like a meal prepared for my dog. Also, you know, I mean, literally like getting her mail at the building where she lives, and people are confronting her and demanding sort of like answers or demanding she change her behavior. And on top of all that, she comes from a space, quite frankly, where women still don't have power. I know that there are more women in the military than ever. I know that things have been put in place to address sexual harassment, misconduct, violence. But women really have to work twice as hard in the military to just maintain their fucking sanity.
Oh, she would agree with you. She would, if anything, probably tell you that's understated. Yeah, absolutely.
And so the idea that she came from this world of being disbelieved and then went out into, you know, the general population, right, regular civilization, and then had these experiences over again for quote unquote different reasons, it just makes me think like how many of us as women have been disbelieved in every single context, in our families, at work, by our partners, by our friends, in our social circles, by the church or other faith-based communities, right? That it's happening at all these levels. And in many cases, all of them are happening.
Yeah. Although, you know, one of the things I love about that essay, she's also a phenomenal writer, is that her better world that she leaves us with is a world in which she just gives less of a shit about what all these people think of her.
Yes.
And I was thinking about that also when I was reading that piece of my essay again about how we like women less as we find them more credible, about how more and more the conclusion I'm taking from that is like, all right, well, that tells us that we can just not worry about being liked. Like, what if we just let go of worrying about whether people like us? I know that it's...
Which is, by the way, antithetic to what we've been taught and socialized as women and quote-unquote feminine beings. It's sort of at the top of the list that a girl should want to be liked.
If I'm going to have to choose between credible and liked, like, maybe I'm going to choose fucking credible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let the people who like me for that like me. I know that's a little bit facile, right? Obviously, like, that is not a choice that Elizabeth Warren had. You know, being not liked does affect us and our lives in many ways.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to be pat about that, but I have been, in recent years, I've been more and more emotionally on a personal level, letting go of like, yeah, what if I just don't care if you like me? What if I, or, you know, there's that famous Amy Poehler line where, like, I think one of the boys at SNL, when she was trying to make some lewd joke, was like, oh, like, girls shouldn't make, I don't like it when girls make that kind of humor. And she, like, wheeled around on him and was like, I don't fucking care if you like it. Like,
right. Well, there's a shamelessness to what you're saying. There's a shamelessness to what you're saying, which is, do not be ashamed of your presence. Do not be ashamed of your power. Do not be ashamed of your credibility. Do not be ashamed that you're smarter than every one of these dudes in the room. I like it. I like it as a call to action, especially as one that feels like it's in our control, right?
Because you're going to be screwed either way. So why not be screwed in a way that you have power? Like, that you own your power.
That you own your power and that you know that their opinion isn't even rooted in fucking reality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the opinions of people about, there are still people who believe that Bill Cosby did nothing wrong. That, like, oh, some people were taking some drugs and having some sex. What's the big deal? Well, that's just not reality, folks.
No.
So, like, we have to constantly also, I think, contend with our own sense of reality being taken into question.
Yes. It's like a cultural gaslighting.
Yes. Yeah. God, we could talk forever, Jacqueline.
I know.
Well, I mean, soon my podcast can be as long as it wants to be, right? Uh-huh. So that's exciting. Okay, we've got to wrap up. I really do want people to read this book. It's, again, a game changer and is so important. And the framework by which you analyze this sort of heteropatriarchy, white supremacy is just, it's so compelling. And it makes so much sense. So everyone, go out and buy the book. Jacqueline is available, or will be soon, for speaking engagements at jacquelinefriedman.com. On Twitter, she is Jacqueline F. On Instagram, she is Jacqueline Fable.
It's Jacqueline Effable.
I know, it's Jacqueline Effable, but I think people then get confused. On Facebook, she's Jacqueline Friedman. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Jacqueline.
Thank you. Literally anytime.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially my executive producer, Karen Dana, every engineer who's ever worked with me. Today, it's Josh, for 7.5 years of amazingness. Senior producer, Raymond Johnson, who's coming with me. Don't worry. You don't have to miss Raymond. The next show you will hear will not be live. It will not be on Voice America. So you can tune in whenever you want by getting Sex Out Loud at the Apple Store, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. The show's on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. That would be another place to go in case you're experiencing glitches. And please, everyone, just take care of yourselves out there and keep listening to podcasts.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.